Welcome back to the Strong Opinions Podcast. I'm Talon, here with Tyler, and we are the Strong Brothers. Now, we have an interesting episode to go over today. We're going to talk a little bit about the finals, maybe some disappointing teams that we saw in the playoffs. Tyler, let's just start this off here. The finals start this Thursday. We have the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Indiana Pacers.
Yes.
So, I guess we've talked about this entire playoffs so far leading into this. I mean, I think we both saw the Thunder getting here.
I thought the only competition they genuinely had. And, you know, I thought maybe the Timberwolves kind of had a chance, but I thought the Nuggets played them the best. And so I thought once they got past the Nuggets, it was like, you know, maybe OKC could do something, but they'd have to play really good. And obviously, they didn't, because 4-1 was that series, and it was ugly. There was not really the one game that the Timberwolves did win. They blew them out, but it kind of just felt like the Thunder kind of just took the game off. Didn't really have any flow in their game. Weren't attacking the ball defensively, and weren't making shots like they normally do. So, and I think the Timberwolves just played crazy. I mean, Ant went off. Rudy was doing his thing defensively, but after that, it was kind of an onslaught what the Thunder did to him. So,
yeah, I mean they showed up. I mean, and the thing that the defense of the Thunder, as good as Shea is offensively, I think the thing that surprised you the most is probably how good they've been a great defensive team all year. But what Caruso was able to do and those guys and you know when they played Denver before the Western Conference Finals, and just how they're able to, they can do so many different things on the defensive side. They can make so many different adjustments. They have so many guys that can defend the other team's best player, and they're so physical. And when you're allowed to be this physical in the playoffs,
yeah.
I think it played so much into what the Thunder want to do.
It changes the way the game's played.
Absolutely. Sure. And you just never saw Anthony Edwards and the Timberwolves ever really get comfortable playing against that Thunder defense.
And it was weird. It kind of seemed like, I don't know, Anthony didn't seem like the same player in that series. And I guess the whole playoffs, really. He didn't really play all that well.
I mean, his first four games against the Lakers, but I mean, just after that, it was just very
up and down for him. I mean, I think, I can't think of who they played in the round before the Thunder. Oh, the Warriors.
Yeah. Well, losing Jimmy is a tough thing. I mean, for the Warriors.
No, it's Curry.
Oh, you're sorry. What am I thinking?
Yeah, I was like, Jimmy played, but you know, Ant was missing just wide open layups and just seemed very off. And, you know, whatever it might have been, I don't know if he just tired, fatigued, whatever it may be. He just didn't seem like himself. And that was probably, what hurt the Timberwolves the most, because he's really the main dude of their team. So if he's not doing what he's supposed to be doing or what he's capable of doing, then the rest of the team kind of slumps off.
Well, and sometimes it just felt like he didn't know if he wanted to be a facilitator, if he wanted to be a scorer. And yes, he can be a facilitator, but he's not. That's not what he does best, right? I mean, he led the league and made three-pointers this season.
Yep.
And they needed him to do that. That's what makes the Timberwolves, that's what made them so hard to beat in that first round against the Lakers, and what they did so well against the Warriors, even though Curry was out and you don't know how that's going to play out. But that's, now, he didn't have his best series against the Warriors, and they did kind of luck out with Curry not being there. But if you're gonna beat the best team in the league, you need your best player to do what he does best, and that's score. And other than that, Game 3 back in Minnesota, it just never felt like he ever got comfortable with that. I'm not fine with him making the passes, but at some moment, and then he is young. He's 23 year old.
Yeah.
He's gonna learn from this. There's not a 23 year old that lead a team to a championship. It doesn't really ever happen. I think Bill Walton did it when he was 24, when the Portland Trailblazers were one of the youngest teams really ever to win an NBA championship. But they just needed him to score, and it just felt like his shot was off. It felt like his attacking was off, like you were just saying. Even the contested layups that he normally made, he never got it going.
Yeah, he never got a feel for the game.
Now would you say that's Anthony Edwards, or do you think that's just how good the Thunder's defense was? And I know he struggled a little bit with the Warriors, and it was kind of weird because they don't really have a rim protector. Yeah, but, I mean, the Thunder have two.
Well, I think it's both because look what they did to, like, the Thunder did to, like, Jokic in that series. I mean, obviously Jokic did his thing, but at the end of the day, that Game 7, they shut Jokic down. I mean, I guess they shut the whole team down, really. Yeah. I mean, the Denver didn't have any answers, and I just think it's just the way they're just so suffocating on defense, and their fast break offense is just crazy. They're so fast, and yeah, I just think once the Thunder start getting a roll, they don't let the game go. They don't let it slip through their fingers like you would see a lot of young teams do. You know, they would get a big lead and then, you know, make a bunch of mistakes at the end of the game and let the other team kind of catch up and then ultimately maybe lose that game. But the Thunder just always seemed like once they have a lead, it's really tough for you to get back into it. You know, it's like, sure, their opponent can make a little run, but then for some reason it just seems like, you know, the Thunder gets a steal, they make a fast break, 2-point dunk or whatever, and the next thing you know they're making a three, and then Shea's getting fouled, and the next thing you know you're down by 14. You're like, what just happened?
The 10-0 runs that they were able to go on in this postseason, it's such a deflating thing when a team of that caliber goes on a 10-0 run, because, you know, you could be up 6 and then all of a sudden you're down 4 in the span of 2 minutes, and it just happens so fast. But I think everyone kind of saw the Thunder getting there. I don't think it was the talent or how good they were. I think it was, can that inexperience break through?
Yeah.
And they were able to do that. And what Shea was able to do, and you saw that in Game 7, and, you know, when they played Denver, I mean, he had 34. I think he was close to a triple-double. But, I mean, what he was able to do in that Minnesota series, I mean, the guy, I think, averaged 32 in that series. I mean, he just had a great series.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it's...
Well, he's just got an act of getting to the spot where he knows he can score the best. And then, like, taking advantage of, like, the defense and what they're giving to him. Sure. And just finding his spot. I mean, he's just really good about...
Yeah,
he doesn't take stupid shots very often. No.
Yeah, he gets into that mid-range. It is. And then once he gets that going, it almost feels like you really can't stop the three ball either, because he can kind of get in... He's going to kind of fake to get into that mid-range shot, and then he's going to step back hit a three on you. It's just...
Well, and it's tough when you got a seven-footer in Chet Holmgren who's can handle the ball, drive the ball, and he's hitting threes. It's like, you know, and like for Rudy, you know, in that Timberwolves series, I mean, Rudy cannot guard a perimeter.
No.
I mean, it's just not going to happen. And I think that was really what kind of hurt them, is Rudy was playing so deep into the post to where Chet could play on the outside, and then he was just hitting three after three after three. And then Rudy would kind of play up, and then that's when, like, Shea or Jalen Williams would even, you know, attack the rim. And that's just where they got the points.
Yeah, and especially when Jalen Williams got going, especially in the Timberwolves, I mean, it just becomes such a tough thing, because it's like, okay, let's get the ball out of Shea's hand. But when Jalen Williams knocking out shots and he's comfortable and he's getting to the rim and he's then getting to the free throw line, it really is a two-headed monster. And the fact that they've been able to develop together is just, I mean, you can just really see it. And then Chet, you know, the things that he's able to do on both the offense and defensive sides of the ball, as, you know, I think he leads the league in defensive percentage at the rim. Yeah. I mean, it's just... The team is built to win, and it was really just going to be that inexperience.
It was going to take a little time for them to... And I think, too, another thing that, like, I watched Jalen Williams had an interview, and he was saying how, you know, I think the biggest part with their team is they have fun together, you know?
Oh, you see it in the post-game and you have to, interviews.
You know, and I think that's part of it, you know? If you're not having, like, a good time with your team, then it's tough to, like, go out there and compete for one another, and then you start to just be, like, one-dimensional...
Yeah,
and I just think the Thunder do it very well. They just play very well together. And, like, you know, Shea could be... And Shea doesn't really ever have bad games, but if, let's say, he's not shooting the ball right away, like, good, you know, the other guys kind of step in. Shea's really good about giving that ball up and letting them kind of do their thing for a little while. And it's like, okay, it's, you know, the end of the third quarter, like, the start of the fourth, and it's like, oh, wait, Shea needs to start getting going. Let's just give him the ball 3 or 4 times, let him get to the rim and get some free throws going.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, I just think they're just an overall really, really good team. And it was just going to be it was tough to see anyone really beating them, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, I think we even talked about it in one of the previous episodes. I was like, the only team I wouldn't want to see in the playoffs would be the Nuggets. and the Nuggets with an interim coach and really like a couple of guys that you just can't count on reliably. And as good as Jamal Murray is, and I think we have praised Jamal Murray so much, and he's a fantastic player, but you have seen it before where he's going to have these great games, and then he does have these down games where it's like, okay, Jokic isn't having a great game, you got to be the one to step up. And you just didn't see that enough, especially in that Thunder series. But then you have Michael Porter Jr., who was hurt, and he's an inconsistent player, and then some of the shots he was taking late in those games, and that hurts. But just that was the only team you could really like see, and I really thought the Timberwolves were going to be able to win another game. And it just, the Thunder, I think once they got past Jokic and the Nuggets, I think they just thought, okay, there's just no one that can actually compete with us now. So let's take it over to the East. The Indiana Pacers going to the finals for the first time since 2000, looking to win their first NBA championship, just like the Thunder. And they take down the New York Knicks 4-2.
Kind of heartbreaking.
It was. And I'm a huge fan of these Knicks. I love Jalen Brunson. Cat's a little iffy for me. But like Mikal Bridges, Josh Hart, love what they do. OG has kind of grown on me. But I mean, just what this Pacers team has been able to do in this playoff. I think they have now three wins where they were down 9. In the last minute of the game, and they're able to win. And a lot of that has to do with Tyrese Haliburton.
Oh, dude is just, he's just a playmaker. He's just a straight baller. It's just, I mean, it's really hard to put into words. Like, you know, you watch the, like, we watch the games or whatever, but, like, I'm still, like, still trying to process, like, how they made it, you know, this far, you know, like, they're actually playing in the finals. Especially who they played and what they had to go through to get there.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, to start the playoffs, I was like, you know, I never really gave the Pacers a chance. And I don't think a lot of people did. I mean, considering, you know, them beating Cleveland.
Well, no, I mean, when you look at, I think we even talked about it, I think, like, we had the Celtics and the Cavs, and obviously the Pacers rolled to the Cavs like nothing. The Celtics lose to the Knicks.
Yeah.
And you don't know how that series kind of plays out if Jason Tatum doesn't tear the Achilles.
Yeah, well, you know, I just think the other game probably would have, you know, and that game was so just back and forth.
Yeah.
So, I mean, not saying the Celtics wouldn't have won that game if Jason Tatum doesn't.
Sure.
But at the same time, we don't know if the Knicks wouldn't have won it either, you know, so, but.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's just kind of crazy. You look at like the Knicks and what they did with Boston. They were down 20
twice, I think.
Well, they were down 20 twice in the fourth quarter against the Celtics in games 1 and games 2.
Came back.
They win it. I think they were down 15 all four time or all five or four games out of the five able to win or four games out of six. Able to win four of those games. It's just it's you're not going to see that again, but then you look at the Pacers and what they've done and how many times they've been down in the last minute and they were able to win, and then they do it to the Knicks in game one. And it really felt like once the Knicks lost that game, it was just like, oh my gosh, I don't know if the Knicks are actually going to be able to do this. Mm-hmm. Like, if the Pacers are going to do that, like, you, they really got dominated that entire game one, and then they just pull a rabbit out of the hat. Hallie hits this crazy shot where it hits off the back iron, floats, what, 5 feet in the air, and then just...
I thought the game was over, and then, you know, and then they review it, and his toe was on the line, or whatever, and then, like, OT started, and I was like, okay, Knicks, you know, you guys are going to do it, and then the Pacers just, like...
They got dogs.
They just turned the corner. It was like they just did not play that whole game and just started fresh, because they absolutely dominated the Knicks.
Yeah, well, when you got a guy in Aaron Naismith who hits... I think it was 6 threes in a row, and he went 8 for 9 in threes and just was a flamethrower. That really, I mean, they were down 16 with under 3 minutes to go, and he just was not going to miss. But so the Pacers win, right? So they go up 3-1, 3-1. Knicks win it in New York, and you kind of felt like, okay, we might get to a game seven back in New York. And the Pacers just absolutely shut the door on it late in that third quarter and start of that fourth quarter. And we knew how good their offense is, especially in transition. That's what the Thunder and the Pacers do really well is run. But the defensive intensity that you saw from Indiana, especially against like a Jalen Brunson and a Cat and just the guys that, and Mikal Bridges was completely shut down in that Pacers series.
I think those are type, like, I think the Knicks, like, they don't have necessarily, like, the playmakers. Like, you're not going to give them the ball and they're not going to, like, make some crazy
moves. Other than Jalen.
Know, like, usually, you know, Mikal Bridges, if he gets the ball in the paint, he's got that nice fadeaway. And then Josh Hart really doesn't have a whole lot offensively to him. He's really good at, like, rebounding. And then,
he's a,
like,
scrappy player.
Yeah, you know, but as far as, like, the offense goes, if, like, Cat's not having a good game or if they're kind of shut down, like, Jalen, like, you know, they were suffocating Jalen the whole series, you know, and he had some great games, and that's just what great players do. But it was just really tough to watch. Like, you know, Jalen Brunson, you know, at the end of that game six, I'm getting really frustrated, and he headbutted
Aaron Nembhard.
Yeah, you know, and I was like, you know, I hate to see that because it's like kind of poor sportsmanship because, you know, they did harass him all series. I mean, they were all over him, and, you know, you hate to see that because Jalen Brunson is an amazing player. And, you know, I feel bad for him because it's like he doesn't have like a whole lot of help offensively.
That's what Mikal Bridges was supposed to be, though. I mean, look at what he did with the Nets, and that's why they gave the Knicks gave up four first rounders for the guy.
I don't agree with that. I think that was he's not a four round first pick.
No, but I mean, when you already and Jalen Brunson's such a ball dominant player anyway, and Mikal Bridges, not necessarily that he needs to be ball dominant, but he needs the ball in his hands a little bit so he can kind of get to his spot. Yeah. And it's just they just have so much going on, but.
And then you got Cat, who just, like...
He had some great games, though. Defensively was a liability. Yeah. Just like Jalen Brunson. He's great offensively, but defensive liability is where you just... Yeah. You need a stop.
Well, it's just... It's tough because Jalen Brunson's a lot smaller than, like, most of the guys in the league. You know, so there's always a mismatch there. And then Cat fouls. His stupid fouls. I mean, I think after they won Game 5, I mean, they had in the interview, I think it was Chuck was like, "What's up with you and these stupid fouls?" And Cat just kind of laughed and was like it didn't like mean anything. He's like, "I don't know," you know. And it's like, dude, figure it out, man. Because you're like costing your team, especially like when you're kind of making a run, you know, if you're down and you're scoring some buckets and you got a couple stops, and then all of a sudden, you know, you have this stupid foul like late in the shot clock and they're going to the line and it just kills all the momentum, and then you cry so much and it's just annoying.
Well, Cat's a little zesty, but and that's also the thing is like it was tough because he got so many fouls and then he had to sit out and then they had to put Mitchell Robinson in and then you can do Hakeem Mitchell and he's going to the line and he can't hit a free throw. And it's just, you just put your team in such bad positions, and he constantly did it in these playoffs. They got away with it in the first couple of rounds, but you're just not going to be able to do that to get to the finals and even win
an NBA finals. Yeah. Well, especially when you're playing such a great defensive team like the Pacers. I mean, that's like kind of what we saw. I mean, they got locked up. Like, Mikal Bridges really had no effect in the series. I mean, he didn't have like an outbreak game like he did in the Celtics. Like, and then, you know, like I said, Josh Hart really didn't have anything going for him.
Yeah.
And, you know, OG, he had a couple good games, but...
They just needed more.
It's just they just needed a... And their defense, really, just...
Very lackluster.
Yeah, you know. It seems like they were kind of lost sometimes.
Yes. And that's what happens when you get two defensive liabilities on the court, though. I mean, especially when one of them's supposed to be your rim protector and the other one... Supposed to be locking down, you know, one of the guards that the Pacers have, and the Pacers bring so much speed, and they're so selfless too with Haliburton and Nembhard.
Oh yeah, well, and it always seemed like, you know, anytime the Knicks would, you know, score a point, it seemed like 10 seconds later the Pacers were already down the court scoring a bucket.
Yeah, their pace is them crazy, and the Thunder's pace, and that's what's going to make this finals matchup so interesting because. Yeah. Really, everything that Indiana wants to do and they can do and they do very, very well. The Thunder do it better.
Oh, yeah. Well, they just have, you know, like if you look at, you know, their starting five compared to the Thunder starting five, I mean, they all do the same thing, but everyone on the Thunder is just one or two steps above.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and it's just, I think it'll be a very high-paced game, and I'm hoping for a good series, but at the end of the day, I just think the Thunder...
They just have too much.
They're going to dominate. Especially when they're coming off the bench with Alex Caruso. I mean, he's been a dog all playoffs.
Oh, he's just such a great defender.
Hitting the threes, you know, and just, you know, I think he's kind of like their hype guy off the bench.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But it's just like, it's just, because when you first saw that the Pacers won, we were kind of sitting here like, oh, okay, they could probably win two games. And then you kind of dive a little bit deeper into it, and you're like, okay, wow, it's either going to be a really great series where I think the Thunder's just going to pull it off in the end. Yeah. It's not going to seven. I'll say that right now. There's no way this series is going to seven.
If it does, then props to the Pacers. I mean, and they've proved me wrong all playoffs. I mean, I'll be honest, I did not. And obviously the Cavs, you know, they had three of their starters out the first two games. You know, but whatever. You know, they came back and they still kind of got dominated.
Yeah.
So props to the Pacers for, you know, really playing an all-around great the whole playoffs.
Yeah, I mean,
you
take down Giannis and, I mean, Dame gets hurt with the Achilles, but yeah. You take down Giannis and the Bucks. You take down Donovan Mitchell and the Cavs, who are the best team in the East.
Yeah.
And then you take down a loaded Knicks squad. I mean, yeah. You really just, you can't get any much better than that in the postseason.
Yeah.
But let's just stay on this finals matchup here, because, like I just said, there's no way this goes to seven, right?
No.
So it's either it's going to be really ugly, or the Pacers are going to push the Thunder a little bit, and they're going to win in six. More likely five, and I think the games are going to be close. But I could see this get ugly and ugly fast.
Yeah, well,
in favor of the Thunder.
I think it gets ugly if the Pacers start slow.
Yeah. No, Tyrese Halliburton cannot play great games if they want a chance.
Yeah.
He has to be amazing in every single game.
Yeah. Like he's got to do what he did in that one playoff game where he had, I think it was like almost 30 points. Like,
a triple-double?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like no turnovers. I mean, that's what he's going to have to do for them to win. And then, you know, Turner, no foul. Like, can't get into foul trouble, can't foul out because he's a big part of their game.
Yeah.
Naismith's
going to have to hit bucket after bucket. Like, when he gets the opportunities to hit threes, and he can't be shy about it.
No.
Gonna have to hit.
Yeah.
Nebhard's gonna have to be a dog on the defensive side. Yeah. I mean, he's gonna have to find a way to slow down Shea, him and Naismith, because they're gonna switch off.
Oh, yeah.
But you gotta find a way. I mean, you're not gonna stop him.
No.
Which, because that's why he's the MVP, but you have to be able to slow him down, get the ball out of his hands, and just hope Jalen Williams isn't the guy we just saw in this last series.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Well, and I think, too, you really gotta, obviously, it's going to be really tough because Shea's been doing it all year long, but you can't foul him. You can't send him to the free throw line 13 to 15 times.
No.
If you do that, you're in for a long night.
Yeah, it will be tough. So, we've talked about it. We've previewed this. Finals will come on this Thursday, June the 5th. First game's in Oklahoma City.
I'm predicting a 4-1. 4-1 series.
I will say 4-1 as well. I think it could go to six, and it's going to depend on Tyrese Halliburton.
Mm-hmm.
He is going to be the X factor in this, and if he just balls out like we all have seen him play, but he has been inconsistent at times. Or you see him
he's
go
not
off,
scoring the ball.
Yes, he's always going to. He's a great passer, great facilitator, but he's going to have to score. So it's going to be an interesting series. It's going to be fast paced, probably high scoring. It's going to be I think close games. I really do think so. But I just think the Thunder just have a little bit more.
And I'll be honest, I think looking at it, I think they might be close, but I think realistically, I think all game the Thunder are going to have control of the game.
I can see that. Yeah, I can see that.
You know, to where they're always going to have like a 6 point to 10 point lead, you know, throughout the whole thing. Because that's just what the Thunder do.
I mean,
they just don't let go of leads. I mean, it's just remarkable in what they do.
Yeah, I mean, once they have a lead, they really are able to kind of control the pace of the game, control the flow. And even we've seen, and I really thought they were going to just be too experienced this season to get it done. You always kind of need a couple of heartbreaks to then push through. And they have just absolutely figured it out. They've dialed in. Shea's played at an all-time level here in these last six or seven games. Really started
the MVP.
Yeah, no doubt.
But, it was kind of a funny little thing, but it was funny when the Pacers beat the Knicks and they were announcing the Eastern Conference Finals, and Halliburton thought it was him, and they announced Siakam, and he was just like,
And this goes to show he might be the most underrated player in the league because we didn't mention him one time until now. Pascal Siakam.
That's totally could be an
X factor, and he's a guy you don't talk about.
He's been playing really well,
and that's why he won.
Yeah, no, he's been.
You know, the Larry Bird East Conference player of the series.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, he's so underrated. But and you saw it like when he won the finals with Kawhi Leonard in Toronto, and just nobody talks about him.
But
he's so fantastic on both sides. He's this big physical presence. He's got speed. Mm. He's got a nice fadeaway. I mean, he can bump you. He can hit the three.
Yeah.
No, he could be an X factor as well.
I think, right there, I think those two guys need to play well for the Pacers to even kind of compete. Not even kind of, but compete with them.
Yeah. They're going to have to play at a fantastic level on both sides of the court. And, I mean, I think Pascal can pick up the slack because we kind of saw it when Tyrese wasn't. You know, he wasn't hitting shots or he wasn't taking shots. Pascal was that guy.
And he looks hungry. So, I mean, you know, now it's tough because now, you know, I don't know why, you know, he just kind of threw Pascal, you know, kind of away when we were talking about this series. But now that I just kind of brought that up, you know, if he's doing what he was doing, like the whole playoffs, I think it might be a little closer than I'm thinking. But I still think the Thunder win it.
Yeah, I don't think there's a way the Pacers win this series. I like the Pacers. I think they're good. I just think the Thunder are just overall too good. And then watch, the Pacers are going to come out and play fantastic, and they're going to win the championship. But that's just how this postseason has been, you know. But so we'll see what happens. It's going to be very interesting. There's so many good players on both teams, and it's not just they're great players; they're great teams. Like play their style of basketball.
Both teams play for one another, you know. Absolutely. It's like they're very a collective bunch, and they both look like they're having fun out there, you know.
Well, when you play that high paced basketball, man, it is fun when you're able to run in transition and you know you're hitting shots and
So yes, now we've talked kind of like who we think's gonna win. Who do you want to win?
I want the Pacers to win.
You want the Pacers?
I would like the Pacers to win. I like Shea. I like that. I just think it would be. I think the Thunder are gonna win a championship, regardless of it being this year.
I think
they have such a good core, and the amount of draft capital that they have, if they really need to go get a superstar,
they
can pretty much whenever they want.
Yeah.
I want to see the Pacers do it. I just think it would be so cool after watching everything the Pacers went through with in the 90s with the Bulls, and then they make it to the finals in the year 2000 against the Lakers, and they lose 4-2, and then, you know, They've run into where they've had some really fantastic teams. They've run into the two best basketball players of all time in Michael Jordan and LeBron James.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just if you're a franchise, how unlucky can you be? And, I mean, the Thunder, they ran into MJ, I guess, when they were the Supersonics. But, I mean, it's just the Pacers really, like, the Bulls kept them out of for so long. Like, I remember those Pacers team when they were going to, like, with Paul George and
Roy Hibbert,
Danny Granger.
Dude, that was when, like, Paul George was that dude.
Oh, man. His last 2 or 3 years with the Pacers and that first 2 years with the Thunder, only 2 years?
Yeah.
I mean,
He was something, you know, and it's kind of too bad to see him kind of, like, degrade and not play the basketball that we're so used to seeing him play, but
Father Time is undefeated, man. 100%. Father Time is undefeated.
But I'm so undecided because, like, I'm not a huge Pacers guy, and I'm really not a huge Thunder guy because I don't know. Like, I like Shea, but I'm just not a huge Jalen Williams guy, and I just think for some reason the Thunder team just comes off as like super like just arrogant and just like young cocky guys, and I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but like it just kind of like pisses me off. I don't know what it is.
It's definitely not the Thunder team that had, you know, Russell Westbrook, Kevin Durant.
It's
just a totally different vibe around them.
And maybe it's because you know, they beat the Nuggets, who I'm very high on, and it just kind of really hurt to watch that because it was they were right there, game 7. But And sometimes I just don't like the way the Thunder play the game. Like, especially with just, like... And I'm not saying anything against, like, the refs. You know, they're calling it how they see it. But sometimes I just feel like they're really on their side with what
fouls. It's not even just the Thunder. It's, like, the... And, like, I don't think Shea's a foul merchant. I just think it's just how it's being called. Because, like, I think everyone kind of does the same thing that he does, where they're, like, trying to bait the fouls. I just feel like... I watched some of these series, and I just thought... Especially with Shea, I was like, okay, that's... It was a little soft, and then you go into this next series, and this guy is getting hacked at the rim, and they're like, oh, play on. Yeah. Like, okay, if that was Shea, he's going to the line every time. So that's my only problem, is just how it's officiated. I don't think it's... Because, like, you watch Jalen Brunson play, and he's doing kind of the same thing where he's trying to foul bait,
you know?
And it's just not called as much as I feel like. Yeah. And, like, I saw this stat where... So they showed the free throws, attempted and free throws made between both teams, the Indiana Pacers and Oklahoma City Thunder, going into the finals. He literally has the top three, whether it's total...
First half, second half.
It's insane. I mean, that's just unprecedented, you know? You can't say he doesn't go to the line a ton, because he does. Now, that doesn't make him not an MVP. He's an MVP because he gets the line, he knocks him down, but everything else he does, he controls the pace of the game, he hits his mid-range shot, he can kind of do whatever he wants on the floor.
Yeah.
But it is a lot.
It just doesn't make any sense, and that's kind of like, I don't know, I don't not like Haliburton, but I don't know, I've just never been...
He's a little corny.
I've just never been on his side, so I'm a little indifferent about these finals, but... If I had to pick one, I'd probably pick the Pacers.
Yeah. I think it's going to be some great games, though. Some great basketball.
I'm hoping so. I really do. And, like, who was I watching? It was, I can't remember, but I was watching a video, and he was just like, you know, I don't see this going to a Game 7, but that's kind of what you're hoping for, because those Game 7s are just... It's just a different vibe.
Especially in the finals.
Yeah.
You know, like, when was the last time you saw a Game 7?
I think it was the Warriors-Cavs.
Yeah.
That was, what, back in 2016?
2016.
Yeah.
Probably the greatest year of sports all time, really. Man. Kobe's farewell, 73-9 Warriors, LeBron comes back, 3-1.
It was wild, yeah.
I believe that was the year Peyton Manning won the Super Bowl and retired, went off into the sunset, Super Bowl 50.
Yeah.
Cam Newton won NFL MVP. I mean, it was a good year of sports. Now, let's talk a little bit more NBA here. Your most disappointing team in the playoffs in this postseason?
I would probably go with probably the Warriors. You know, and I get it. They played a pretty good Timberwolves team, but it just seemed like, you know, if they could just win one game, they were going to get Curry back, and then you might have a little hope. But they just looked
really lost out there.
They looked terrible, and Jimmy Butler didn't. Like, just didn't seem like the playoff Jimmy.
No.
You know, and then, like, Draymond kind of just seemed like he was taking some bad shots, and then, you know, really terrible fouls, and then I always say his name wrong, the white dude, Podzemski.
I think you're right.
Podzemski, it's a tough last name, but... You know, he had a couple of good games in this playoffs, but he's just not a guy that you can rely on to knock down shots. Especially, you know, like, he had some wide open shots that was airballing, missing, like, just bricking them. And it was just tough to watch. And I was disappointed that they couldn't come away with just one win without
Curry.
Just
to see if Curry could come back.
Yeah, you know.
I can see that.
Because I felt like if they could get Curry back, then it changes the whole dynamic of the series. It changes the way that... The Timberwolves have to guard everybody on the floor. And, you know, I think that would give Jimmy a little more freedom to kind of just feel the game out. Because that's what he does, you know. He kind of waits, you know, especially if they're kind of closer in like, the fourth quarter. He's able to kind of, like,
sure.
go off a little more. But I feel like when he has to, from the first tip off to the other game, he's got to be that guy. He's not that player, you know.
Not anymore, no. No. I think you saw it with the Heat, he was able to do it. But with this Warriors team and the new version of Jimmy, I think it really was like Steph was Batman and he was Robin.
Yeah.
And he kind of fed off that a little bit. But having to be guarded by the best player, it's tough.
Yeah.
It is tough. I like the take. It's tough just because they did win and beat the number 2 seed Houston Rockets in a game 7 in Houston. So that's the only thing.
I mean, I guess,
but I see what you're saying.
Yeah, I guess the other... I wasn't disappointed because I wanted them to lose. But, I mean, for everybody else, or just, like, the whole aspect of the playoffs and who was on their team, probably the Lakers. You know, I mean...
Well,
they just looked terrible. They looked terrible.
Somebody's gonna talk shit about.
Oh, them. I'm just saying. Like, what is that? Not who you'd be. Was the
them or the Cavs? I would probably say.
I guess, yeah, the Cavs.
Yeah, it was a disappointing. And not necessarily just that they lost the first series, but to only win one game. And I thought JJ did not play or did not coach to his caliber.
No.
And that was probably.
Yeah, he definitely looked like a first year coach.
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, you play your 40-year-old veteran, LeBron James.
The whole thing have.
I mean, and really, I think he played like 48 minutes. And that's tough.
Yeah.
That's tough.
Yeah.
And then you don't play a center the entire game 5 when Rudy Gobert is dominating you on the offensive glass. I understand Jackson Haynes is an offensive player, but I mean, come on, man. Just put a center in for a little bit. Let's get some rebounds. And then the Cavs. What they were able to do, I mean, they blew out the Heat by the most points in a series ever.
Yeah.
And then...
And
the Pacers did the exact same thing to them where they... It felt like the Cavs were going to take it away. They were up 8 with another
two games in a row.
And they just gave it away. Halliburton hits this amazing shot after he gets a rebound. Donovan Mitchell, I think, is just... Obviously, he hasn't won and got to a conference finals, but just what he's able to do in the playoffs, scoring ability, it's pretty remarkable. So, I'd probably be Lakers... than the Cavs, just because of how great of a season the Cavs had.
Yep.
I could see the Lakers losing in the first round. I just didn't think I would see it 4-1.
No, yeah. Well, that's when, Anthony was being Anthony Edwards, Anthony.
Yeah, absolutely. He was going. I mean, you could. And I think you can kind of tell, like, and he did the exact same thing last year to Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
Where I think he loves feeding off, like, okay, these are my idols that I looked up to, and I'm gonna kill him.
Yeah.
And that's what he did, And then I think once Curry went out, it was like, okay, we can win this. Yeah. We're gonna be okay. Yeah. So, yeah. But those would be the two. So, we've talked some NBA here. We've talked finals. Let's talk a little college baseball.
Okay.
The regionals just wrapped up. And more specifically, I want to talk about the SEC.
Yeah, I know. We kind of talked about this last night. They had 13 teams.
13 of 18 teams.
Go to the regionals.
Only 4 advance.
Yeah. And is that because they got cocky and thought they were just going to walk in there and kind of roll through their opponent? Or was it because all the transfer portal and
there's a lot of parity in college baseball.
Yeah, so obviously there's a lot of different teams out there that are good, and I think baseball too is just a very
strategic game
because it's obviously like all the coaches too and how they play and their lineups and who's pitching and who's not pitching. So I think that really plays into it, like if.
How far do you let your starting pitcher roll it out
if he's letting some hits? So I think those are some big time decisions. And like obviously who and when do you put in your best pitchers?
Sure.
What games do you do this in? Like do you try to knock them out quick, or do you maybe try to let another guy kind of maybe do it and then let your offense take over? But then if like obviously if you're not hitting the ball, then it's like. Do I need to get my...
Gotta rely on the starter a little bit more.
So
I think that's what it is now, though, is if you have... Like, LSU we kind of watched, and what really changed the game for them, I mean, they were down 5-1.
Yeah, they brought in, what was it, Peters?
Carson... Cason Evans.
Evans, yes.
And he struck out nine in a row. And 12 overall. So, I mean, that changes the whole game you. You know, well, and then they were able to go on this huge run.
Well, you kind of watching that game, you kind of thought LSU could explode because I think they did. It was like two innings back-to-back where they had bases loaded.
Yeah, they did the same thing the night before, too. Yep.
And, you know, it was two outs, obviously, so it was just like, you know, if they could get something going here. And then they, you know, pop fly both times, and then it was like, okay, and they're starting to hit the ball a little bit. And then it was just a hitting frenzy from, I think, the
fifth inning. They multiple home runs.
Yeah.
Guys were just nailing the ball. Yeah,
base hits, and then it was just some errors on, I'm trying to think of who they played.
Little Rock.
Yeah. And there were some errors that Little Rock, you know, did that, you know, it's tough because I don't know how well or how good Little Rock actually was, you know, so are they prone to making those types of mistakes and they just played really good up until that moment? Because they were, you know, I remember the one, it went to the shortstop and he overthrew first base.
Yep.
And the guy was able to go to second base. Because it was just, they advanced into it, you know?
Yep. Yeah, it happens.
Oh, yeah.
No. It does. And they were a really good team. You got to be somewhat of a good team, and you got to win your
Well, they did beat LSU the first game.
Last night? Yeah. Or the night before. Yeah. But, I mean, when you look at the SEC, especially it's supposed to be like this super conference now.
Well, yeah, I mean, because we talked about this, it was like you had, I think, out of the top five, it was four teams from the SEC, I think.
Yep. And the top 10, they had six.
Yep. So, I mean, right there just kind of tells you what that conference was able to do all year long. And then for them to kind of just, because like the one seed Vandy and the two seed Texas got eliminated.
First time ever that the one and two seed aren't going to go to a super regional in the same year.
And Texas got swept.
To a team in their same state.
Yep.
In UTSA, and that can't happen.
No, that can't happen.
Especially with the brand that Texas is.
Yep.
It just can't happen. And Vandy losing to, they lost to, I believe, Louisville, and then they lost to,
was it Cal Poly?
No, that was Oregon. It wasn't Duke, but anyway, Vandy loses. It was to Wright State.
Yeah, man, that sounds about right. I guess I can take a look at
that. That can't be a team you lose to. Louisville's one thing, but to lose to Wright State.
Yeah, it's just ugly.
Especially as a number one overall seed. And Vandy's kind of like in the past had some, like they've won national championships, but that was kind of the thing with Vandy is they would have these great regular seasons and then go into the postseason and really kind of struggle.
Yeah. It's not like the NFL or even like college basketball, or I guess not even college basketball, but like college football, like more often than not. But like your top seed, more often than not in baseball, is not going to win the World Series.
Oh yeah, it does not happen.
It doesn't happen very often at all. Like most times, like the one seed does make it to the World Series, but they get knocked out the first round.
Yeah,
it's wild.
Baseball, like, college baseball stuff, even college softball is a little different. Yeah. He just ran the sport for.
Oh, Texas lost to Kansas State.
No, they beat Kansas State.
Oh, my bad. Sorry. Yes, they beat Kansas State.
The Texas lost. Yeah, we said that. Texas lost to UTSA.
So who are we looking for?
Vandy. Yeah, they lost to Wright State.
That's who it was.
Lost to Wright State, and then Louisville beat Wright State.
Yeah.
The SEC was a little disappointing. The Big Ten was a little disappointing. They only had one team advance to the regionals. That can happen. Obviously, four teams get in for the SEC, which is still...
It's pretty solid.
It's not bad. 4 out of 13 is a little rough, but at least you got a bunch of teams in. You're going to have, no matter what, at least one team in the World Series because of the Tennessee-Arkansas matchup.
Yep. I think that's probably going to be one of the best matchups. And then you got, I think the next best would probably be like Coastal Carolina and Auburn.
Florida State, Oregon State, I think could be good. Florida State's been good for a little while now.
Yeah.
Oregon State won a championship in 2018,
yep.
I believe. Yeah, LSU, West Virginia. West Virginia is a very underrated team.
Well, yeah, I mean, no one really saw. I guess a lot of people picked them coming out of their
the Clemson region. Yeah. Yeah, so that'll be interesting. All right, so you got the Super Regional. So let's just run through this here quick. So in the Super Regional, it's going to be...
What's up? I was just going to say, I think North Carolina is going to be a hard team to beat.
Yeah, they were really good last year.
Yeah, and they're going to be hungry after what happened last year, yeah. I think.
So, in the first regional, you got Louisville and Miami. That's going to be the Louisville Super Regional. The 5-seed North Carolina is going to host the Arizona Wildcats. Arizona is actually ranked going into the regional, just not a national seed. An unseeded matchup, the Murray State Racers and the Duke Blue Devils.
That'll be a toss-up. I guess while Duke's favored, they're a minus 550.
Yeah. Murray State took down Ole Miss.
Yeah.
In the regional. West Virginia LSU. LSU is the 6th seed. Auburn is the 4th national seed. Coastal Carolina's 13. Coastal Carolina won a championship back in 2016. The 14 seed and reigning champions, the Tennessee Volunteers, going to go to Fayetteville to take on the Arkansas Razorbacks.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one.
The team that knocked out the number 2 overall seed, the UTSA Roadrunners, will go and play in the Los Angeles Super Regional against the team that the Nebraska Cornhuskers were able to take down in the Big Ten Championship game, the UCLA Bruins. And then the 8 seed Oregon State Beavers, who they won a championship, like I said, in 2018.
Yep,
and the 9 seed Florida State Seminoles.
Oh, yeah.
So a lot of great baseball to still be played here. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of baseball, though, is you've got some teams you're like, okay, you knew they were going to make it, and some teams you're like, okay, wow, this is just very unprecedented.
Kind of like that Cinderella run.
Yep. Now let's talk about college softball here. Because you just watched one of the most dominant champions and the most dominant champion in college softball history,
yep.
My Oklahoma Sooners.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, come up just, well, not in college softball. I mean, I've watched them, but I mean, you know, what can you do? They come up just short against the Texas Tech Red Raiders. They walk off, sack fly.
Yeah.
They lose it 3-2.
That's tough. You know, to try to go and defend your title for the 5th straight year, you know, for them to even win 4 is pretty.
And to make it to the World Series again. I mean, they just do it every year.
Yeah.
But so in the championship series, it's going to be the 12 seed Texas Tech Red Raiders and the 6 seed Texas Longhorns. Texas lost Oklahoma last year in the championship series, and Texas was actually able to beat Oklahoma to give them their first loss in the College World Series.
Yep.
And actually, this was the first time Texas beat Oklahoma in the College World Series.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Oklahoma's been that team, man.
No, yeah,
they've
no.
been
well,
that
I
team.
I know, because I think like this year was the first time they lost at home in, like, well, how many games?
Oh, bro. I wouldn't know the number, but for sure.
Yeah, it was a long time. And it was, like, it was pretty shocking because it was a team that they shouldn't have lost to.
Yeah. I mean, over the last 5 years, the team has just walloped.
Well, I feel like, you know, every year, and I don't know if it's the same pitcher. I don't really follow, you know,
no, softball. It's not, but
it just seems like they always have one or two just phenomenal pitchers.
Well, they recruit fantastic, and you know, the Women's World Series is in Oklahoma City. So yeah, I mean, it's interesting. We're gonna just tip right back on into the NBA. Tom Thibodeau fired as the New York Knicks coach.
Yeah.
The move I really didn't see coming. We won't talk about it for too long here. But
yeah, just
some stats I want to read off as Tom Thibodeau as the Knicks coach. He was 226-174 over his 5-year tenure. He was a 2021 Coach of the Year, where he was able to get New York back into the playoffs. He has 4 playoff appearances in 5 years, 24-23 playoff record, and he has back-to-back 50-win seasons. He also has 24 playoff wins. The last 8 coaches combined for the Knicks have 7.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of people just thought they shouldn't have lost to the Pacers, and I don't know if he could have coached it any better, because, I mean, like, what were you going to do when you know, Cat's having foul trouble. You know, Mikal Bridges isn't doing anything offensively. Jalen Brunson's got foul trouble. I mean, at the end of the day, I don't know what he could have done better, I guess.
Yeah, no. It was going to be tough. And honestly, I think some people thought that they were going to let him go
last year.
Well,
or
the end of the regular season, kind of depending on the playoffs. And unless they won the championship, more than likely it was going to be gone just with how badly they played in the regular season against the top teams.
Yeah.
Especially with all the talent he has. And
yeah.
I think the thing that always gets Tibbs in trouble is how much he plays his starters.
He started to kind
of... He did change it up a little bit in the playoffs, I will say.
He did. Because, I mean, it felt like... And obviously it was just because of the way that the Knicks bench played. But, you know, it seemed like... You know, Jalen Brunson played a good majority of the first quarter, but then it seemed like, you know, 3/4 or even like a lot of the second quarter, you know, you didn't see Jalen Brunson.
I mean, you kind of had to with just how badly defensively he can be sometimes. Yeah. But that's really all I wanted to talk about. Thibodeau's probably going to get another coach, but this could be the thing that really propels this Knicks team, or it could really end the run that they've been on.
You think they make some big trades?
I don't think so. I think they've already made the big trades. You gave up 4 first-rounders for Mikal.
Yeah.
You completely switched the roster when you traded Julius for Cat.
Yeah.
And you gave up Dante DiVincenzo.
Yeah,
I think you've made the trades. I think you go and get a new coach, new philosophy. You run it back.
You try to run it back.
And you just see if you can do it. The East is going to be wide open again next year, especially with the Celtics.
Yeah.
And they're going to... Celtics are going to have to make a ton of crazy moves. Sounds like they're probably going to trade Drew Holiday and Kristaps. Jason Tatum's not going to be there the entire next season.
Yeah.
So there's really not a favorite. I mean, you would think the Cavs would be the favorite, but...
They're so young, too.
Yeah. I mean, in that core, Donovan Mitchell's the oldest.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's really been the what's going on in the NBA. Finals, right. Again, will be on Thursday. Excited for that to start. You're going to have the Super Regionals this next weekend. The weekend after that will be the College World Series.
Yes.
I think we're going to try to go to a World Series game. So hopefully we can get some pictures and some videos and things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there just isn't a ton going on. We don't really talk MLB.
Yeah.
Is there any golf talk you want to slide in here?
Just that what Scotty's doing right now is pretty... exceptional and amazing. I mean,
he's won the last 3 out of 4 tournaments, correct?
Yep. Yeah, it was funny. There was a little stat where they said, and it's kind of shitting on the Rockies a little bit. Sorry for you Rockies fans, but in the month of May, Scottie Scheffler has 3 tournament wins, and the Rockies have 3 total baseball wins.
Yeah, it's been rough. Hey, they won a series today.
I know.
Oh, man. Good for the Rockies.
They needed that.
They're only now the second team ever to win their 10th game after losing 50. The other was, I believe it was the Kansas City Union. If I'm thinking correctly.
So, like, way back in the day.
The 1880s.
Yeah, sounds about
They didn't even have a logo for them.
Makes sense.
Long time since that's happened. You saw the White Sox be historically the worst team in MLB history. Rockies are currently on pace to be even...
worse than that.
Yeah.
Well, maybe they'll turn around after this.
Yeah, you would hope. You got about 100 games left, so you got time.
Got time. But yeah, no, I think anytime Scotty's teeing it up, I'd be prepared for him to either win the thing or definitely be in the top 10.
Well, he's damn near in the top 5 every single time. He's there. So
yeah, no, it's honestly.
So is he first now in FedEx Cup?
Yeah, he's been first for the last like two
since
three
he won
weeks.
the major.
Yeah, I believe so.
What a stud.
Yep. Nope.
Because what was the tournament they just played at?
It was the Memorial, the Jack Nicklaus.
And he's won it back to back years.
Yeah. He's actually in a category of just 2 other players, and Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson, of defending a championship from the previous year. And you know what's crazy? The crazy stat about that is Tiger Woods has done it 23 times, Phil Mickelson's done it 5 times, and Scheffler's done it 3 times. And they're the only 3 players to defend a championship.
Tiger's just on a level of his own. Oh. I knew Tiger was good. I know it's
like
that.
He, like, and they, another stat, and I could be wrong on the numbers, but it was like the first Tiger Woods, his first like 250 tournament starts, he had like 75 wins, and then Scottie Scheffler's first 250 starts, he has, I think it's like 16 or 17 wins. So that just shows you what Tiger was doing.
Because how many majors Tiger got?
I think he's at 15. 15 or 16.
That's just incredible.
Yeah. No, he was that guy. I mean, and another crazy stat is, and obviously so many people talk about this, but like Scottie Scheffler's been number one in golf for the past, like, I think 2 years, maybe 2.5 years or so.
Yeah.
But I think he'd have to be number one for the next, like, 13 to 14 years.
Yeah, it was like 2034.
Yeah, for him to even reach Tiger Woods.
That's just incredible. That's incredible.
Yeah, and you know, like, you're watching what Scottie's doing, you're like, wow, this is just amazing. Like, and then people start reading off or listening off all the Tiger stats, and you're like, well, okay, Scottie, you got a ways to go, buddy. And I think, too, and, like, nothing to, no disrespect to Tiger, but I just think the level of competition is a little different nowadays. I think the courses might be a little harder. They're definitely longer. So you could go hand in hand with, you know, how great each player is. But even, you know, they had an interview with Jack and Scottie after that win, and Jack was like, I think, you know, he's more consistent than I am. I think he's playing probably the better golf than I ever have in my career, which is pretty crazy for one of the greatest ever to do it, to say that.
So just to give everyone just a little thing. So over Tiger Woods' career, he held the number one ranking for 683 weeks, which is a little over 13 years. And then in a cumulative order, so where he never lost the number one ranking, he did it for 264 weeks altogether. That's over 5 years that he held the number one ranking.
Yep.
That is astonishing stuff.
Yeah, no. He just never lost.
That's just, yeah, I mean, you're probably never going to see that again.
No, not with just the, and just like all these amateurs coming into the field of play. And I mean, like you just saw like this weekend, like that Ben Griffin, I think that's his name, Ben Griffin, mm-hmm. I believe.
Yeah, that sounds right.
You know, he's starting to come into his own. He just won a tournament last week, and then he came into this tournament, was playing phenomenal golf, and then kind of has made a couple mistakes on the back nine of that final day, you know. But, and, you know, you kind of feel the pressure of playing with Scottie Scheffler because you're watching him play, and it's just like he makes no mistakes. He hits the ball exactly where he wants to. And even if he doesn't hit exactly where he wants to, he puts it in a spot to where he knows he can get an up and down from.
Well, even if he has a bad shot, like you said, he's probably the best guy to come back from that.
Oh, yeah, right? No. I mean, just his mental game is really great. And he's, like, the best at, like, say if he bogeys a hole, the next hole he's going to birdie it. He's the best at bouncing back.
So, obviously, with age, that factors into it. And we're just going to get a little into golf here. But you would probably say Scottie's going to run golf for at least the next 5 years.
You know, anything's possible. But that's probably, you know, that's what he's on pace to do.
Is there anyone that you look at that you think can, just in you know, the top 10 right now, that you think, okay, he can play with Scottie for the next 5 years?
There's a guy, he hasn't really been playing all that well this year. I mean, he has one win earlier this season, but Ludvig Åberg.
Okay.
I mean, he's young. I mean, he's great with his irons. But he's still pretty young and inexperienced, to where he kind of makes mistakes, to where put himself in a lot of trouble. And like I said, he just hasn't really been golfing all that good here of recent. I mean, that Ben Griffin guy, I mean, and maybe this is just a little run that he had, you know, but anytime that you can win a tournament and then come back the next week and you're fighting to win another tournament, you know, you're playing that final round on the final group of that final round. I mean, it's hard to bounce back like that, because you're riding so high after that win, so the next week you're kind of like, you slope down a little bit, you know what right. I mean? But no, there's a lot of great golfers that I think could kind of, that Sepp Straka, I mean, he's really good, but I don't know if he's at the level of Scottie, and I don't know if he'll ever be, but
I don't think there's anyone really at the level of Scottie right now, maybe besides Rory.
And he, I don't know, after and he just hasn't golfed very good after the whole Masters tournament. Kind of fell off a little bit. I mean, drove the ball poorly at the PGA Championship.
Well, that's because his driver was...
Well, so was Scotty's.
Oh, they were both considered illegal?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
How does that happen?
Well, because, like, they use it for so long, and then the face of the... The face of it gets... Because they hit the ball so hard.
Interesting.
Yeah, so there's not a lot of... what's the word? Like, bounce back on the club face, so it goes farther and straighter.
Oh, so that's... Yeah. So it wasn't anything really to do
with... No, Rory didn't do anything wrong. It was just, like, you know, they use a driver for so long. Like, Scotty talked about it. He's like, yeah, I've used this driver for, like, the last year. You know, and so, you know, you continuously are just hitting the ball at this... Because these guys hit the ball pretty much the same spot every time.
Right.
Because they're just very precise with their club face. But, yeah, it just starts to wear on them, and then the face of it gets thinner and thinner and thinner to where the bounce back isn't...
Huh.
And it just gets stiffer, and so it just they just drive the ball better. It wasn't anything that they tried to do, you know. And I don't know if that's why Rory... You know, drove the ball, but you would think someone at his caliber that would affect him that much. You know, sure. I just think, and yeah, it's just weird because you thought him after, you just thought after him winning the Masters that there was going to be this huge weight lifted off his shoulders and that he could just go and play golf freely again. Because I just felt like over the past, I think it was 13 years that he's been trying to complete this Grand Slam that he was 11 years, yeah, okay. But
13 since he won his first.
Yeah. But it just felt like, okay, now he's won his Masters, and, like, no one's talking to him about it. There's not a lot of pressure on him. He can just go out and just golf the way that, you know, everyone's expecting Rory to golf. And it just kind of hasn't happened, you know? He didn't miss the cut at the PGA Championship, but I think he shot a plus three for the tournament,
Rough. Yeah, that's rough. I mean, I don't have much to talk. I couldn't shoot a plus three in my sleep. So, or in my dreams. So, that's all
right. No, but that's just, you know, and then, you know, you got the... I think it's the U.S. Open that's the next major. And, obviously, I think Scotty's going to be a huge favorite in that one. But, yeah, we'll just have to see what all happens. I mean, if Scotty just keeps playing the way he's playing, I mean, I just don't see anyone that's going to come in and beat him. Yeah, it's the U.S. Open that's next. That's not this weekend, but the weekend after.
Yep.
And the previous winner of that was Bryson DeChambeau. And, you know, that's another guy, I guess. You know, we don't talk about LIV golfers very often, but he's someone that I think could...
Well, he beat Rory in the U.S. Open last year, right?
He did. Well, Rory kind of beat himself.
Yeah, that's...
He missed two putts within, like, 3 feet, which he's never done, you know? Wow. He went, like, 300 and, like, some putts and up until that putt. He missed two back-to-back, I think.
Yeah, you can't do that.
Nope. And then, well, obviously, Bryson made that crazy up and down from the bunker to win it. But, no, and I think another person I think could win a major... this year's Jon Rahm. He's playing really good golf. So yeah, it'll just be interesting to see.
The whole LIV thing is just still wild.
Yeah, I kind of forget about some of those guys because I don't watch
them a ton. They're not really national TV, are they?
They are. Yeah.
Well, we've got some NBA finals in. We've talked a little college baseball, college softball, and we got your golf talk in for you golf lovers. But feel free to check us out on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and then give our Instagram page a follow at The Strong Opinions Podcast. This has been the latest installment of The Strong Opinions Podcast featuring the Strong Brothers.